Tammy Werner, Trina Nadura, Tam Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood, Anjali Kamat, Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Ozbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrietti, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. By the way, Buffy, happy, happy birthday. If you want to sign up for our Daily Digest, our newsletter, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, diversity, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
There is a feeling like the clenching of a fist. There is a hunger in the center of the chest. There is a passage through the darkness and the mist. And though the body sleeps, the heart will never rest.
Shed a little light, oh Lord.
Shed a little light, oh Lord.
So that we can see.
Oh, now.
Just a little light, oh Lord.
A little light, oh Lord.
Wanna stand it on up.
Stand it on.
Radio, 88.7 FM, WRHU Radio, Hofstra University, 89.5 FM, Bush Radio. I'm Andy Gladding, and this is a very special edition of One World, although I think every edition of One World is special, but this one's really special because we're all in the studio together. Well, except for Cody. Cody's not here. But our friends from Bush Radio, all the way in Cape Town, are here in studio in New York. How cool. Lydia, our gorgeous co-host, sitting right across from me. What a cool thing, huh?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. I'm so excited.
I am too. I can't believe you guys are all here. What a great time to come to the United States because, wow, I don't think there's been more of a week of news than the week before a presidential election.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is insane. And talk about an election that is going to have an impact far and wide. But before we talk about all that, and trust me, we're not the only people to be talking about that, let's all introduce ourselves because we have special guests that are not usually on the show. So, obviously, Lydia, you can introduce yourself first.
All right. So, I am Lydia Makhwangana, and yeah, I'm with Bush Radio, 89.5, right here in Hofstra with you, Andy, and Cody.
And why don't you introduce everybody else around the table?
So, with me, I have Renato.
Hello.
And there's Jasmine.
Hi. You know, this isn't a TV show. Jasmine's not. She's like, yes, I'm here. But you know, we have to hear you.
And then there's Adrian.
Hi.
And Tunisia.
Hi.
Wow, you're nice and loud. We love that. Of course, on the line, we have Cody Millar, all the way in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I think we'll just get right into this. I'm just fascinated with the fact that, first of all, that through the magic of communication, we could all get together virtually, but now we're here in person. And for those that don't know, this story of how we all came to get together is a little strange, but it involves reaching out. It involved years ago, a connection that I made with Bush Radio, just happened to be in the neighborhood in Salt River, and decided to walk in and say hello. And then many years later, you guys are now here. We've been doing One World for about 2 years now, which is, I think, a record for a lot of radio shows. Over 50 episodes now. Who would believe it? 50 episodes. And it's really just quite amazing. We've had a chance to talk about a lot of really fascinating topics, ranging from arts and music and culture. But most importantly, the central topic, which is the power and reach and voice that community radio gives us. Because as I was told the other day by a close friend of mine who also works in the business, that community radio really is one of the last free media spaces that's not being exerted control by a larger corporation or company. A lot of times, even a local paper will have opinions that are controlled by money. And in this case, our collective stations, we get a voice right into the community. So I think that's really great. And our community, in this case, is the world. Mm-hmm. So that's a really great thing. I really want to kind of get into, first of all, what you guys have, what your thoughts are, since you've been here now for a couple of days. What did you think the American election or the perceptions of the American elections were going to be like before you got on the plane? Anybody can take this one.
Okay. The elections, wow. I thought it was going to be quite interesting, crazy, because I've been seeing it on the news how everything has been going. So I was like, okay, I can't wait to actually see this myself, you know, the how everything goes down, what's happening, you know, being amongst the crowd. So it's I haven't been there, but hearing and leading up to it, it sounds interesting. And,
yeah. Anybody else have any thoughts about that?
So I was gonna say the same like with Lydia. Now, I haven't really fully experienced it yet, but so far it seems like it's gonna be very chaotic. There are a lot of people that has very strong opinions on what will happen, what the outcomes might be. But at the same time, people also still seem confused about what's happening around them.
Yeah, and I think Cody could probably speak to that a little bit. Cody is sort of our media master, especially when it comes to topics for folks that are in the Gen Z sphere. And I don't want to call you out like that, Cody, but you're definitely an expert when it comes to these things. You provide a lot of insight. Why is there so much information coming out from both sides right now? And how can you even fact check it?
The thing is, we're living in a time where we can actually send and receive information more rapidly. And as we've been able to increase the speed and flow of communication, we're also seeing a divergence to more partisan silos of media, which leads to less conversations across the aisle. On top of that, there's a privilege of time where many people are unable to dedicate time to research and fact-check information, let alone candidates and ballot measures in depth. That's where our role as journalists come into play, to summarize the information from our politicians accurately and succinctly. And so for me as a young person, where this is my first presidential election I'm eligible to vote in, which I was able to do for the first time.
All right.
I'm also in a battleground state where people on both sides of the aisle are deeply invested in their candidates and want to see their candidates succeed. Beyond the presidential election, though, I think it's equally important that we look to local elections. These are the people that are able to build rank and run for higher offices like senator, governor, president. So it's, for me, really important to look at your school board, your local judges, you know, city council members. Also, there's been many instances of people saying online that they thought they were registered to vote, but their record has been removed. A way to prevent that or ensuring that you're continually registered is to make a habit of voting annually in each election.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, and geographically, you've got a very unique perspective on this because...
Listen, the amount of text messages in the past few weeks has been crazy.
Well, explain, if you can explain, you know, you're in Pennsylvania, which we call a battleground state, and Pennsylvania is sort of ground zero for this race because of, first of all, the number of electoral votes it carries. And this is something that's kind of confusing to a lot of people that are not from the United States. They say, well, the popular candidate wins, right? South Africa, the popular candidate wins, right?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the entire concept of the Electoral College was mind-blowing. And I think, you know, it really came into effect, I think, two elections ago for us, where it sort of was featured right in our news media. And many of us were going, but
yeah,
that person won. Like, what's the problem? So in many ways, and I mean, even for us preparing for this trip, you know, we had to figure out, what does this mean? Check the system. What's different? What's the same? Because that is going to play such an important part of this election for you guys. But I think just on another level as well, there's two things at the moment that I'm quite happy about. I know some people might feel differently, but there seems to be quite an interest on the local level.
Yes.
And that's something we've lost back home. And a station like Bush is incredibly worried. The groundwork that, you know, one of your presidential candidates has done over the past 4 years on a local level is bearing fruits for them right now. So some of our politicians back home need to learn about that, good or bad. It's not for us to say. But you have to put that groundwork in on a local level. And what you've seen, what we've seen, is that Americans are getting involved on a local level. More so than before. And that's important on a global level and for South Africans. People have to get involved on the local level if they want to effect change. Changing. We've seen that. We've gone from, you know, a majority party that had almost an outright majority, almost a two-thirds majority, to now they have to form a government of national unity because they... Yeah, I mean, I'm quite critical of some of their political mistakes that they've made. But the enthusiasm one, I think everybody has an... what I've noticed here is everyone has an opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I'm shocked by opinions that groups have. I mean, I had a discussion this evening with somebody at the hotel while I was before I got here. And I made certain assumptions as a journalist that, oh, okay, you're probably supporting this candidate. Da, da, da. And what they said, I was like, oh, wow. And then I asked about their reasons and, right, and all of that. Why, you know, what do they think? So that for me is interesting. And then again, your broadcast media, I mean, just the radio, television being bombarded with ads for parties, that's unusual for us to see.
Yeah. Well, that's a huge part of the business. And one of the things to realize, you bring up the local level, this election will be won on a local level, especially because of the Electoral College system. If it was popular vote, then hey, you know, whatever, the majority wins. There are districts, at county districts, that will determine the outcome of this. There's always...
It's at your polling place. It could be at the ward or district level that, by a handful of votes, that determines the election.
Yeah, like for example, there are districts that are notoriously famous for swaying a presidential election by, you know, talking maybe 10,000 votes. Maricopa County always comes to mind, the Phoenix, Arizona area, Cuyahoga County in Ohio. These are districts that will tend to be heavily left leaning, but the number of votes in those districts will then contribute to the statewide count. And what will end up happening is if there's not enough turnout in one or two of these major population centers like Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, Ohio, or Phoenix, Arizona, the state will not flip to that candidate. So really, you know, you could be doing really well in almost every state that you need to make that electoral count, but then there'll be, you know, 150 people in one town don't show up, or a couple of buses stop running in another county, or there are places in Georgia where the polling places sometimes get purposely put out in the middle of a rural area somewhere, so the folks from the larger city or population center, they can't make it. So these are things that, these are like little tricks in American politics have been going on for years. And I'm not being one-sided here. Both sides definitely do it. But I think Pennsylvania, and then Cody can really speak to this, you're in Pittsburgh, which is definitely an area that's being watched. So what are you seeing right now on the ground?
Right now, I'm seeing multiple election rally events almost weekly. We've seen some of the highest turnout in rallies and frequency of campaign events in a single area, not only in Allegheny County, but also Indiana and Erie, Pennsylvania. Indiana and Erie are two cities to watch this election. But talking to voters on the ground, I have lifelong Pennsylvanians, West Virginians, people from Ohio, Mississippi, Arkansas. And one thing that is very interesting to me coming from California is that they provide a voter information guide back in California. So it's a nonpartisan document that, you know, has all the candidates, their statements, what people supporting them say, what people not supporting them say about them. And then same for ballot measures. And Pennsylvania, as far as I'm aware, does not provide a similar document. And in fact, the sample ballots that tell you who the candidates are, who's still running post-primaries, weren't even published on the county election site until a few weeks before early voting started.
Ooh, wow. So not a whole lot of time to figure out what's going on.
No, so you can't even see who is still running past the primaries. And in Allegheny County, our paper record is the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, which has been on strike for over 22 months. So there's been major hesitations to look to them for information. Similar to Philly, Pittsburgh is a huge union town. So you see the possibility of U.S. Steel being acquired by Nippon Steel as a major issue here in Western Pennsylvania. But because of that, people don't always know where to turn for reliable information. There's WESA, our local NPR affiliate, Public Source, there's of course other outlets, but it's hard to connect to the people when most of these publications have a digital access barrier. We have a lot of broadband insecurity, and the Affordable Connectivity Act did not get reauthorized this year.
Yeah.
In the U.S., we had a program where depending on income, you could get a $30 credit towards cell phone or home internet bills to increase connectivity access. Recognizing that Wi-Fi is a necessity to participate in the U.S. workforce and economy. So that didn't get reauthorized, unfortunately. So we're seeing the impacts of that months later, where many voters are unable to get frequent, up-to-date information in this election.
Well, that's interesting that because the information is considered to be not credible by both sides. And that's we did not really have this until recently. Nobody really ever doubted mainstream media until really the last 10 years. If, you know, the New York Times said something or ABC TV said something, that was it. But what's happened is as the I will blame this on the conservatives, as business interests, especially on the right, have begun to polarize media groups, the calls from some of the right wing media are not reliable. But the audience will eat it up. And then what's happened is you've had other, they call it the echo chamber. You know, it's if Fox News will just says it, nobody else says it, well then, okay, well, it's just Fox being Fox. But then you'll have 8 or 9 other websites that immediately say the same thing. So if you Google it and you don't really know where to fact check, you Google it, your search history is just going to fill up with repeats of everything you've just heard. So I'm curious, do you guys have this issue with unreliability in the press, or is that not a problem at the moment? Don't all talk at once, by the way.
I think South Africa does have good checks and balances for factual news and journalism. And I think like our press ombudsman is quite vigorous in that if we do get into trouble with our press ombudsman, and we do get into trouble with regulatory bodies, So, you know, I'm not tooting our own horn.
Feel free to toot.
But I think that there is a level of credibility. We have had political seasons where the credibility of the media was questioned. You know, in former President Jacob Zuma's time in government as well, we had the Bell Pottinger scandal, the PR agency that was sort of using bots online to spread certain messages and very polarizing rhetoric at a very specific time. And so, yeah, there was been some difficult seasons where it became an issue, but I think more or less the checks and balances are there.
Well, that's a good thing, and I can definitely tell you, keep an eye on that because it can change very quickly.
Well, I think the situation that we have is we don't have that many people online.
Right.
You know, it's growing exponentially, all of that. It's important. But it's unfortunate that it's still very polarized in terms of class, etc., who is online. It's a big fad for the commercial entities.
Right.
You know, they believe it's the great, you know, you got to show numbers in terms of, you know, who's watching, who's being retweeted, how many followers, all of that. The reality is that has very little effect in South Africa. We've seen it with political parties like the EFF. They thought they were going to win the previous election based on a few Twitter followers and how active they were. You know, Twitter followers, in our case, doesn't necessarily mean feet into the polls. Yeah, I think it's slightly different because you have better access. So for us, what we find as Bush Radio is we have to counter a lot of misinformation that gets spread via WhatsApp.
Right.
You know, messages that are forwarded. That we find that's a bigger challenge than necessarily what's on social media. So we do a lot of countering of that. We get like, oh, there's a fire. Oh, there's a riot. Oh, buses are burning and you find out nothing's happening.
Right.
You know, so, and again, sorry to toot our own horn and both you guys and us, but that's the power of radio.
Right.
And that's why it's so important that we look at misinformation and that we go out and verify. So if somebody said something to studio, we actually go check it. We just don't accept it. And that's the important part because we get, I mean, these guys get the random messages in studio about odd things. And they have to go out and check it or phone up and find out what's going on.
You know, Adrian, you bring up a really good point. You just said it. You have to go out and check it. One thing, and Cody could definitely yak your ear off all day about this, is the problem with local media just kind of disappearing. I mean, they call them, you know, media deserts and news deserts. And that makes the, you know, the go out and, you know, verify yourself whole angle difficult to do. At the same time, though, we have an incredible new tool that has sort of replaced the need for all these, you know, like a traditional mobile news truck, and that's the smartphone. Mm-hmm. Because you don't necessarily need to send a reporter out on site to get B-roll if there's already somebody taping the house fire or doing that and tagging it. You just got to make sure that video is accurate. So you can get the content really quickly, but again, checking the credibility. So Cody, how do you find, especially as a journalist and you're in a hot potato area right now, how would you verify a news source? You get something that you get a video sent to you. Hey, this is happening right now. There's a ballot box burning at the corner of Lafayette Hill Avenue and where else. You know, how are you going to verify that?
The typical thing I do for image-based fact-checking verify the location is actually where someone says it is. I remember a few years ago there being this video of aircrafts flying over Ukraine, this Ukrainian village, where people said that they were dropping bombs or something like that or on their way. And if I'm remembering correctly, the aircrafts did fly over that area because they could verify the roofs of houses match. It was a church. They verified the steeple of a church matching satellite imaging. However, they could tell the year was different because they had new construction in that area that wasn't visible and was still under construction. And the color of the leaves on the tree didn't match the season. in journalism, we really have to be vigilant about, you know, verifying our facts. And the typical person is not going to be able to do that, you know, on an everyday basis. So the main thing is seeing how many original sources can verify the information. We want at least two independent verifiers and to publish on the third. For example, the ballot box on fire in Vancouver, Washington, are you able to call the local county elections office to verify that that thing happened?
I found it really interesting. You bring up the Vancouver, Washington ballot boxes that were mysteriously lit on fire a couple of days ago. I was not aware that they actually have fire suppression systems inside the ballot box. That's crazy. Like a little fire extinguisher in there.
Yeah, I saw that on one of the news channels. I just wanted to add to something Cody said. So besides, you know, people spreading misinformation, what we find, and again, you know, celebrating the power of radio. I'm going to stop saying tooting our own horn. but celebrating the power of community media and local media in particular is, you know, when we check the WhatsApps, we get several WhatsApps to studio going, Bush Radio, I got this message. Is this true? And people are actually asking us to verify it. You know, so that shows the trust that a station like Bush, and I think a station like, you know, having community radio linked into those communities adds to that, because they're now turning to us, the audience is turning to us to go, well, is this actually true, guys? Can you tell us? You don't find that on commercial media.
Right.
Or our public broadcast.
I think that is wonderful. Because I'm in some WhatsApp groups where you have 50 plus aunties spreading false information. Like, you get some magical health benefits if you eat this ginger root.
You'll live forever.
The fact that they have this relationship as both a listener, and in rhetorical theory, we talk about a hearership, right? They're not just a passive audience, but they have a responsibility to engage with what you say on the airwaves as well. That they have this reciprocity of thank you for both trusting in us and providing a service. Let us help you and say, hey, although you're helping me verify this, you may learn about information being spread that you may not be aware of, which is just part of this unique relationship we have, that intimacy that we have with the radio listenership.
Very true. Very true. And you're correct to use the word intimacy. It's hard to develop that same relationship with a newspaper or even a TV station. I think just because when you listen to something, you pay more attention to what the words are. Mm-hmm. And you're also listening to the person's voice and affect and emotion, whereas opposed to looking at, you're distracted when you're watching it. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that could distract you visually, but when you're paying attention to something auditorily, and you have, especially if you have headphones on or earbuds in, you know, my wife is a huge consumer of podcasts. She loves comedy podcasts, either comedy podcasts or crime drama podcasts. And I didn't realize how much she loved crime drama until we went to a museum in New Orleans called the Museum of Death. And it's all about serial killers and murderers. And she knew every single story that was in that museum. She goes, oh, I know about this
one. Do you need
one.
To be worried?
I am worried. Trust me. Okay. I'm the most faithful guy you'll ever meet, because I know what my wife is consuming, you know, in her spare time. But I'm saying, how do you know about all these different serial killers? I mean, she knew every single one. A lot of them were women, by the way, which I thought was really interesting. And she goes, well, I listen to all these true crime podcasts. I'm saying to myself, when do you have time to listen to this much information? And I realized that because she works from home, you know, she's on the laptop doing work, but then she has her earbuds in. So she's probably listening to 3 or 4 hours worth of audio a day. So I don't even consider that, you know, being a traditional radio guy, I'm listening to radio in my car most of the time. If I come into the house, I'm done listening because I'm working at a radio station. But for her, the consumer, she has a different relationship with the media that I have. So, Cody, you're absolutely correct to describe it that way. You know, I love that you're using those words.
And speaking of podcasts, I'm not sure if you saw that controversy when Kamala Harris went on the Call Her Daddy podcast. And people were very like, oh, why are you going on this, you know, unserious platform? Because the podcast talks about very intimate wounds issues. But here's the thing I think most people aren't thinking about, is that most candidates would only go on late night shows. But by going to a venue where you have young voters listening, people that are typically disengaged from political environments, or conversely, highly engaged, non-traditional or rather new traditional formats of advocacy or politics, you're reaching a whole new demographic that would not be engaging with mainstream media. And so I think, you know, thread for future political seasons to look at these voters that do not look towards traditional mainstream media is, you know, so important.
One of my favorite terms of this election, by the way, is the term brat for the Harris campaign. Mm-hmm. I think that's so funny because I think of brat, I think of a diet, you know, the brat diet, or just the traditional term brat. But this has become like a term of affection. That's something that I think came from that podcast. Oh, God, here we go. Cody loves to school me on the Gen Z terms. Now, one thing I want to ask you guys, that now this is something I'm really curious about. The term Nazi has been thrown around by both parties this election. I think it started with the left calling the right, you know, Trump a Nazi, and then he started calling the other side Nazis. So they've just been, I think Trump definitely won the Nazi competition because now he just keeps talking about Nazis. Now he's not a Nazi, so he keeps that in the news cycle. But what do you guys think about that? That's a pretty strong term. I mean, you're going all the way to the most diabolical thing in recent history. So what are our thoughts on this?
I guess it just rub the opponent into the dirt, you know, and doing it as aggressively as possible. Because, yeah, I don't know how you would recover from that.
Yeah. Like, why that word out of all words?
Yeah, it, exactly. I think you're going all the way to the top.
Yeah, it's a bit too much. Because you know what the Nazis is all about. You know the background of it. Now you're just throwing it around at each other. It's like, I will. Sure.
And it's so funny seeing this because this is not really something that we experience back home. You know, there's like subtle undercover words that they might use, but you know, when it's like this on the nose, it's a little bit scary because if both parties are using it, which direction do you turn and go to?
Yeah.
The question becomes, is by using such a highly charged word, is that diminishing the value of that word? Or is it creating exactly the desired effect to demonstrate the direness of a situation? You know, this whole election has been an analysis of words between weird and fascist. You know, there's an article about a historian who thought the label fascist was overused, but then he said he's now alarmed by what he sees in global politics.
Well, it's interesting. I think in terms of using the Nazi term, anybody who's older, I think, is going to have a bit more impact on that because you probably... And you know, the people that were actually experiencing it are very old at this point. Everybody who's still around is sort of at the end of their life. But the generation below that, I think, would be able to identify with how horrible it was because they probably heard stories firsthand, especially if they had family members that were in concentration camps or being affected by some of the terrible policies that we all know the Nazis had. I think, though, you kick the can down two or three generations, it might not have the same amount of kick. So perhaps that's why it's being used so flippantly. I would think maybe that's a possibility. Or maybe could not have, maybe doesn't have the same impact for younger voters that it would for older voters. You might not take it as seriously. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. But isn't that scary as well? You know, having that word being thrown around. Like, people are going to go around with each other saying, you're a Nazi. Yeah. You know, it's going to be a joke.
Yeah, people have been using the term fascist in this election, and I don't think they even really understand what it is. No, you know, if you're living in fascism, there are people in the world that are living under fascist rule.
Yeah, I mean, Brenda Leonard, our station manager, sort of one of the discussions in the prep that these guys were having, because the word fascist has come up. And if you know anything about Brenda's history, she was strong in the anti-apartheid movement. You know, she was part of the armed struggle, all of that. And somebody in a meeting, because Brenda's quite strict and you know, when it comes to meetings and, you know, protocol for her is very important in terms of meetings. And somebody actually said to her, "Oh, you're behaving like a fascist."
And how'd that go over?
That did not go over well. She stopped the entire meeting, and these are all community media and commercial media people. And she addressed that subject specifically.
Wow.
You know, I think that person was shell-shocked after that, because Brenda made them explain to them what the term means, where it comes from, and how dare you refer to me as a fascist when I've given, you know, from the age of 13, both the armed struggle, anti-apartheid, the work of Bush Radio, all of that, and you calling me a fascist. Wow. I think that person got quite a schooling. I do want to say about the Nazi thing. I do find that younger people use it.
Right.
You find and stuff I've read where people talk about, oh, my manager is such a Nazi.
Right. I think casually it's been around to say it publicly.
Yeah. I mean, even my wife's an editor, and you know the joke with editors was, oh, if you're very strict about grammar, it would be, oh, you're a grammar Nazi.
Right.
So the word's been around and being used, but it was always in intimate conversations or amongst friends or colleagues.
I find that very interesting because I've never heard that term really used. Maybe it's just the communities I surround myself with, but if I have heard it used, it's mostly by people, you know, age 45 to 60.
Yeah.
Come on, Cody. You're making reference to my age. I messaged Andy and I said, please remember I'm the old guy in the group. It's
all relative.
I think it is that age group that you know uses it in, you know, quiet conversation or complaining about the boss or that sort of thing.
Right.
But I see also there's quite a few number of words that are being thrown around loosely. Like what stood out for me when we arrived and I was watching a little bit more and consuming, you know, the political ads and watching the rallies, you know, like calling the media a mob, or is these very strong descriptions, even just for the media. And what I do admire about the US is that, you know, the agenda is clear. You can tell when you're watching a left-leaning media channel or when you're watching a right-leaning news channel, you know. And in South Africa, it's less clear, which is a little scary because you don't really know where the agenda is, and unless you maybe Google the directors to see where the commercial interests are. So it is a lot more clear in the States, which is a good thing. But, you know, to be isolated because of your journalism or your positions, it's so tricky. And it's interesting to watch.
This started about 20 years ago. Fox News Channel was born out of the merger of Disney and a company called Capital Cities Communications, because when Disney bought Cap Cities, they took on ABC, which was pretty much the real standard bearer of news at the time, and had really kind of had been for a while. And when they took on that merger, and they took on that company, which owned many, many broadcast stations across the country, one of the programs that came with it was World News Tonight, which was a very big, highly watched, you know, the anchored world program for Americans, sort of like the BBC, but, you know, our version of it. What happened was, just like with all corporate things, this being a business, the business of news, they inherited a lot of very high-paid producers that had been with the company for, you know, 25, 30 years, were making a lot of money. So what's the first thing they do? They go in and they fire all the people that are making a lot of money, just like most companies do, you know, after a merger. And now you got all these really highly qualified news people that are, you know, fueled up, ready to go, and have just been laid off and are not happy. Well, the folks over at Fox, Rupert Murdoch and his cast of characters, and Roger Ailes being one of them, see an opportunity here because they go, well, there's all this talent is now on the market. We can pick them up at, let's say, you know, 70% of the cost. We're going to start our own network. By the way, just so you know, you want to come and work here, there is going to be a slant. So that's kind of how Fox was born. So the initial launch of Fox had very, very, very qualified, highly refined news production people working on it. It looked good, it launched well, and it took off because they positioned themselves as the other voice. There's the mainstream media, and then they were going to be the voice of, you know, we're going to just give you the information, you can decide what you want from it. The problem is the information they were giving was, and still is, very much slanted. So there have been attempts to, you know, CNN went through some pains about 4 or 5 years ago. They were becoming too left-leaning, and people didn't like that. So CNN has been pulled back to the center.
in the cable news world. So basically what Fox did was they turned news really into a brand that identified with the political parties. That was the beginning of the branding of political parties in a way that was monetized. It was monetized media and big money. And right after that happened, that's when you saw this special interest groups, PACs, and everything else sort of start going nuts. That was like in the late 90s, early 2000s. So fast forward 24 years, that's kind of why we're here. So it would be nice to have the perception of media be, well, it's pretty much neutral, but Americans are very much divided on how they get their news and where they get it from. And that alone will separate people. You know, you just start talking about, oh, I saw it on NBC. Oh, NBC, you know, that's where the liberals are. Well, I saw it on Fox. Oh, that's fake news. And that's where I think everybody starts saying fake news. It's all fake. So that's definitely a side effect of that. But it's taken about 20 years to get there.
What I would highly recommend if you wanted to see how Americans view an issue is to look at one local source, one national source, and maybe a couple international sources. You know, looking at what, you know, the BBC or South China Morning Post are covering about an issue, and you get a really good insight into what others outside of America are seeing in America that we may not be thinking about, and what things we're seeing in America that others outside may not be thinking about.
Pretty good advice. It definitely works. Moving to a topic that's a little more fun. While you guys are here in the States, what expectations do you have going forward to take away from this whole process? I mean, I know you've had the opportunity to see have a couple of different experiences since you've been here. You've been obviously at WRHU at Hofstra, and then you were at Long Island News Radio today. So what was the takeaway from today's visit to the airport?
Okay, so it's very fascinating being in such a sector when it comes to media and so forth, and also just doing the comparison between South Africa and how U.S. do various things, including elections and so forth. So there are slight similarities. How U.S. will do or cover certain things compared to South Africa. And it is just nice to also, what we basically obtain here, to take it back to South Africa and try to implement it in the daily stuff that we basically do on a day-to-day basis.
Interesting. So now, like, when you guys toured the station today, what was something that stood out that was, you know, during the discussions of, like, how the folks over there do everything?
The fact that I won't need to engineer. That I have someone that is able to control all of that. And then you, as the presenter, you just do your research and you do or you interview someone, and you don't need to worry about all the glamour on the or the lights on the or accessories, as I will call it, on the mixers and so forth. So you don't need to worry about that because there's someone else dealing with all of those buttons.
So here's what we're going to do, Jazzy. We're going to send you back with the whole thing. We could actually send an engineer back with you. You don't have to worry about it all. You're just going to talk from now on. That's it. I think she's in. She's totally in.
I think and Jazzy really liked the dump button.
I think they actually need that.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, just, you know, I think the experience, you know, for many of us, when I grew up, the U.S. was, a lot of my peers who weren't politically active was like, oh, we want to be like the U.S.
Right.
That was a big thing. We grew up with U.S. TV. I was telling Andy, I think Andy's wife, the story of how as young people, you know, 5-6 years old, we used to run home to watch Dukes of Hazzard. And not understanding what the Confederate flag actually meant, but it was an exciting TV program. You know, I'm from the Starsky and Hutch and Chips generation. Well, back then, because we used to always get everything quite a few years later. You know, so we grew up with a lot. Like a funny story, and well, applies if you understand a little bit of Afrikaans. In South Africa, it was very strict that, you know, English and Afrikaans were the only two official languages. Everything else wasn't recognized. and again, I'm showing my age by saying this. The first Die Hard movie.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So I was looking at this. We used to get these ads in the paper for what's coming up. Now, admittedly, we'd get it a few years after it's released in the States. And because you were forced to learn Afrikaans at school, I was looking at this and Die Hard. My colleagues are starting to laugh because I think they're figuring out the joke. I looked at these words, Die Hard, and I'm like, why is Bruce Willis starring in an Afrikaans movie? Die Hard. Which means the heart. It made sense to me that Bruce Willis would be in a movie called The Hard. They're laughing because it's really bad. My head translated those words into, it had to be Afrikaans.
It's funny you bring up Die Hard because a lot of people don't consider this, but I consider Die Hard to be a Christmas movie.
Yeah. We made my son. Well, that and It's a Wonderful Life we watched as a family.
Oh, that must be a great double header.
Yeah. But I mean, if I would like others here to share there, because I think it varies in ages here. You know, being in a struggle background and a media background from a kid, actually, because I was lucky to have a godfather who was a journalist at the height of apartheid in several war zones in Africa, and that influenced my decision to become a journalist or at least go into media. It's interesting to see what connects us in terms of people, what we share in similarities. We have the same concerns. We have, South Africa has trauma to deal with. We're dealing with that, both on a station level, individually, and various communities. Yeah, I mean, there's so much similarities between the two nations, and so much to learn from. We hope whatever happens in elections doesn't affect it negatively, too negatively either way. But I think that's an important part for us. I mean, U.S. culture is a big thing in South Africa. A lot of people look up to the U.S. and is influenced by that, but some of these guys could talk about it more. Yes, we're developing a pride now in our music, and it's become popular, sure. And we have artists like Tyler and you know, Doja Cat, who has South African heritage, and all of that, Lebo M, etc. So that's good.
Right.
And we're very proud of it, but it has played a very significant part in our history and our national makeup, for that matter. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm here in New York, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, I'm a Sopranos fan, and I'm like, how do I get? I packed a leather jacket for that particular reason.
Oh boy!
You know, and I'm hoping it gets cold. And why isn't it not that cold here yet?
Well, unusual election, unusual weather. We can tell you that's usually not like this.
I believe you have a drive. I mean, I think Lydia them can touch on sort of a more contemporary view of U.S.
Well,
now we're going to be quiet. Now we're writing in the answer.
So I can say, look, from like all the movies and all the series that I've watched, you know, I saw this life of, like, you know, glitz and glamour, and everything is amazing and big and beautiful. And, you know, and interacting with the students, with the people, you know, and just experiencing things. I was saying earlier today that I feel like I'm at home, you know, because it's the same issues, it's the same concerns. And also, like Aiden mentioned, we all have the same mission, you know, it's about serving the community and getting the proper messages out there, you know, and just helping to the best of our capability. And it all seems so good, you know, on the front lines, but once you get to be behind the scenes, you really see the daily struggles that, you know, everybody, well, the daily struggles and effort that everybody, you know, puts in to make it better and more understanding.
Yeah, and yeah, that was for me, first of all, with the station at the airport. That was the first time for me seeing a radio station at the airport. That was very...
Other than just the speakers playing.
You know, it is an actual radio station. That was absolutely amazing.
The owner of Long Island News Radio, John Caraccio, a very talented guy, is alumni of WRHU.
Oh, wow.
And he has his reasons, which I will not disclose on the air, for why that station is there, but it's pretty creative, and... He's very smart. He's a very smart man, that's all I'm going to say. So yeah. Having a radio station by the baggage area in the airport was pretty cool, right?
Yeah, very cool. It was wonderful to see. And as for my views, wow. Well, coming to America, I thought I'll be seeing celebrities every day.
What about me? Hey!
Because that's what I see, you know, on TVs and social media, that America, you know, it's big, it's beautiful. There's no problems in America. It's perfect. But then, like, you know, but when I got here and I'm like, I got a reality check, you know, that, oh, no, there are problems. And people do have some problems that we South Africans go through, you know, homelessness, the students, you know, not having money, you know, jobs, they also have jobs problems. So I was like, okay, all right, seeing America in a South African light.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's one of the best part things about doing this show, and it's become more and more apparent the longer we've done One World together, is that you said it perfectly before. We all have, as at the community level, very similar issues. Mm-hmm. You know, as we go up and become more national, things are different. But at the community level, we're all kind of worrying about the same thing. And that's one thing that it's been really, I will say, interesting to see as we've gone through the last 2 years, is that a lot of the things we talk about, they're happening on, but we're all looking for the same thing. Satisfaction, I think, would be the biggest thing. Everyone wants to have some sort of satisfaction in life. And at the community level, you can see that, mm-hmm. where people's realities are. You know, glitz and glamour, I mean, we're right next to New York City, but New York City's got, you know, it has their own problems as well. Wow, we burned through almost an hour really fast here. I'm going to ask a real local question. While you guys are here, what kind of food are you really excited to try?
Pizza.
I just ordered a Philly steak, and so I'm going to have it for the first time right after the show, and ooh, I'm looking forward to it. And the Mexican stuff have been really good.
Yeah. Cody lived in Philadelphia for a while, and there's what they call a Philly steak in New York. The people from Philadelphia, just like Cody just did, will go, that's not a real cheese steak.
Whenever I had friends visit from New York, they would try a Philly cheesesteak and say they've never had a cheesesteak before that.
It's true. I don't know what they do on the other side. You know, New Jersey is the kind of the buffer that keeps New York and yeah.
It's the Cooper Sharp that makes a difference, which is a white American cheese.
Yeah, which that in itself is a mystery. I mean, nobody actually knows what's an American cheese. Even the Americans don't know. It's little bits of everything. But not in a good way.
That and Scrapple.
Oh, God, Scrapple. You've been in Pennsylvania too long. Go back to New York.
I was going to say, y'all better come to PA next time.
Jeez. Adrian, it's your culinary...
I'm going to have to do some sort of, you know, Italian sausage or some sort of deli sandwich. I'm simple. I'm a simple eater. You told me about the dipped sandwich. I think I've seen it enough on YouTube. I've got to try that.
Oh, yeah.
What you got to do is, if you're going to Manhattan, is Charles Pan Fried Chicken. It's a New York institution, and there's nothing better than Southern food in the North.
All right. All right. Those are big words, Cody. Jazzy, where's your taste buds laying? We want to see where you're at.
Food-wise, not really sure. Hasn't really explored, but dessert. So been overdoing it a little bit there. So trying a little bit of everything. But nothing really stood out besides the red velvet cake. Ooh. That I enjoy so much. I will put everything else to the side for that. And it actually lived up to how it's supposed to taste. Because I thought, okay, South Africa's red velvet is top notch. And then I tasted, and I was like actually very impressed.
Nice. All right, good. Well,
And oh, the carrot cake, the carrot muffins that we basically added your mom.
Oh yeah, that's my Andrew Gladding's specialty.
Better than South Africa. So normally they have nuts in, and I didn't taste any nuts in those that your mother made.
Oh well, I know she listens to this show, so mom, good going on those, good going on the pastries. Lydia, what about you?
For now, I also haven't explored, but what I know is that I want to try Popeye's chicken.
There's a Popeye's right next door.
Really?
Oh yeah, you could do that as soon as we're done with the show, you can walk right over there.
Oh seriously, because I've been wanting Popeye's. I've seen it everywhere growing up.
I just had it last night. I love it. So good.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Although they still give you extra sauce if you go, no, that chicken for Popeye. I think
the other thing you should check out if you're ever in the southern United States is people watching at a Waffle House. It is the best free entertainment you will ever see.
No, that's a southern thing. We don't do Waffle House here. Thank goodness. All right, guys. Well, listen, that's our show. The cool, I'm just gonna say right now, even though this is a week before, this will air in New York on Election Day. So by the time the people are listening hear this broadcast, it's going to be about 3 hours till the polls close on the East Coast, about four. Wow. So, yeah, go out and vote. In the meantime, we're going to touch base again next week and get an update from everybody here and find out how the Bush Radio American Adventure is going. Mm-hmm. So once again, guys, for 89.5 FM Bush Radio in Cape Town and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, this is One World Radio. See you next week.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jelle.
The One World Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, diversity, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Radio 89.5 FM Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in New York. A continuation to the One World Radio team from Bush. Coming to New York to experience the American presidential elections in 2024. We spoke last week about what the experience of the team was first arriving in New York and having a chance to see America as people in this country prepared for a historic election between what we now know will be the incoming president, Donald Trump, versus his now defeated candidate, Kamala Harris. Very interesting episode last week talking about perspectives, and we're going to continue that discussion this week. So, hey, guys, you're down in Washington, D.C. First of all, let's talk about your experience in D.C. What did you think about our nation's capital in the United States?
It is absolutely amazing. I'm enjoying DC. I've been doing a lot of sightseeing. Like, there's so much deep history in this site. Like, I'm really enjoying it. It's absolutely beautiful. I don't know. What about you guys?
In Washington, D.C., I actually started noticing how people were commuting to work on these scooters and electric bicycles. I found it very odd where I actually saw people wearing suits and these jerseys, like, actually on their way to work. Strange, but okay. Oh, yes. And also, I had the experience of being on one of the scooters. I almost got into an accident, the poor bystander. but she's okay. I did stop next to her and ask if she's fine. And other than that, it was fun. I wish we had that back home. I'm going to miss it so much.
You can always throw a few of them in your luggage and take them on the plane. I'm sure they won't.
Don't tempt me, Andy. Don't tempt me.
Well, we have to try and get Jasmine's luggage into her bag first.
Oh, I'm sure. Did Jasmine do a little shopping while you guys were over here?
Yes, a lot actually. So you're gonna have to be posting some goods to South Africa.
Nope. Yes, no problem.
But what I also notice around Washington, for instance, is like when we interviewed the people in New York, they are very friendly, and New Yorkers get the rap of they're not friendly people. And that is what some of the people stated that we interviewed. But once we got to Washington, and I was like, no, these are the people that's not friendly. Like, yeah, so New Yorkers is friendly. And what they also stated was that the whole environment or the sectors and so forth, it's basically a scam at the end of the day, and it's true.
No, you bring up a very good point. People, the misconception about New Yorkers is that New Yorkers are unfriendly. It's not that New Yorkers are unfriendly. We're just very busy. New Yorkers are actually very friendly people. And when you come to New York City loves when you come and visit. It's the people that aren't from New York that I think are unfriendly, that either move to New York City or are...
How large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
I'm the sun and the air, all the shyness that is criminal and vulgar. I'm sun and air, but nothing in particular. You should shine. Thank you.